What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, September 16th, 2022. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
What's up, Tim?
Nothing much, Bless. Excited it's a Friday. I have a good Friday energy going, ready to get into this weekend, get some things rolling, nice. Get some things moving. Do you have any plans?
Plans for the weekend? No, I did have plans tomorrow that got canceled because one of our friends got sick. But I did have plans to go out with a group of friends. Actually, not go out with a group of friends. Actually, stay in with a group of friends and watch all the Twilight movies. We're going to have a Twilight night where we go through each. There are a lot of plans involved with it. Like there was going to be a Team Jacob versus Team Edward board where with each decision they make in the movies, you are moving your name like toward the Edward side or toward the Jacob side, and I was really excited for that. There's going to be like a host of different snacks, including a blood bag that's filled with Kool-Aid. Was very exciting, and yeah, like I'm sad we've delayed it now. We're doing that in a few weeks because one of our friends got sick, but that was gonna be my plan. Now I'm probably just gonna sit back, play some video games, play some Tekken, maybe
God of War, maybe continue your
I'm actually very close to the end of God of War. I'm wanting to do I'm planning to maybe do a stream to end it out, and because I probably have what 3 to 4 hours left. I hit the part where like
it's been 4 years, Bless.
I know, but I'm sure people now that Ragnarok's about to come out are probably planning to play for the first time. Yeah. I'm close to the end. I'm close to the end is all I'll say. So I probably have like one stream away from finishing it, and I kind of want to stream the ending of it because I think that'd be an exciting thing.
I hope you do, and I hope that encourages Greg and Janet to pick up the pace a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've seen Janet's updates, and I'm like, I don't know. The pace you're going, I don't know if you're going to beat this by Wednesday. Greg, I don't know, hopeless at this point.
Greg, I think, could, because he has time scheduled out on the calendar, and I trust his planning skills sometimes when it comes to that kind of thing. So I think Greg is going to beat it. Janet, I'm worried about, but also Janet is a soldier. Like, Janet, when she wants the game, she's a gamer-ass gamer, and so I think they'll get there, but I think for me, I very much budgeted my time to where I was like, all right, I got to start this 3 to 4 weeks early. I got to play, let's see, an hour a day or 2 hours a day to definitely finish this by the time I get there. And let me tell you, I was worried at first because my first playthrough of God of War probably took me anywhere from 25 to 30 hours. This playthrough, I'm going to have this game beat in maybe 14 hours. Turns out mainlining God of War is a very quick playthrough, and I did not realize that because I was doing all the side stuff when I first played. But yeah, I'm excited to actually get to the end and then maybe pick up my PS5 or my PS4 save and then do the side shit there.
Damn. Bless is in, everyone. You're going to hear all about it.
Maybe. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it, Barrett.
Will he? You'll have to find out next week on PS I Love You XOXO, where they re-review God of War 2018. So stay tuned for that. Really exciting stuff all around. But we're not talking about that today. Today, we're talking about Street Fighter 6, Tekken 8, Elden Ring already winning awards, and more. Because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on the aforementioned youtube.com/kindafunnygames or roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games Daily. We'll be right there for you. If you don't have bucks to toss our way, any of that stuff, it's totally cool. When you're out there buying stuff on the Epic Game Store, use our Epic creator code Kinda Funny, and it helps us out without costing you a penny more. But if you do have a buck to toss our way, you want to go to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where you can get this show ad-free. You get to write in, be part of the show, and you get the exclusive post show that we do for all the episodes. Little housekeeping for you. Our Clerks 3 in review is up right now. Does Greg Miller cry during it? He does. I'm going to spoil that for you. When and how and why? I'm not spoiling that for you. You're going to have to go check it out.
crying during a Clerks 3 review is something. And I love Greg Miller so much because I think he's the only person that could pull it off.
I mean, I think multiple people cried during Clerks 3. So
is Clerks 3 that kind of movie?
Clerks 3 is that kind of movie.
All right.
But all right, you're going to have to watch the movie. Go support that type of movie in theaters now. And also then go listen to our in review, which will probably be our lowest viewed in review of all time. Hey, but prove me wrong, motherfuckers. That's the challenge out there. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady. Just him. They get all the glory, all the fun. Today, we're brought to you by Shopify and MeUndies, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Story number one. This comes straight from Street Fighter's Twitter. Street Fighter VI has revealed its full starting roster. Behold, the opening movie for World Tour, featuring art of the 18 characters on the launch roster for Street Fighter VI. Barrett's playing the video right now if you're watching along with us. It's a super fun little opening video here. Bless, I liked the style of it. It's the right level of like corny and cringy and like just, it's that perfect Street Fighter style. You know what I mean? I love when they commit to like a aesthetic.
I mean, I think that's what people love about Street Fighter III Third Strike. Is that's a game that gets talked about a lot. And that's because that is the most stylish Street Fighter game, right? Like the animation looks good. The character select screen looks great. The music that they're playing is dope, right? It's dope ass rap music playing over the character select. And everything about that game is stylish. And as we've gotten into Street Fighter 4 and even more Street Fighter 5, Street Fighter 5 just feels so uninspired compared to the Street Fighter games of past. And Street Fighter 6 looks like it's actually trying and trying real hard in ways that I really like. And Tim, I think you're probably more of a Street Fighter person than I am, because like historically I've played Street Fighter games, but I've not fallen in love with Street Fighter games just because historically I've been very bad at Street Fighter. But with the announcement of 5, right, I went back, I picked up Third Strike, and I've also been playing, or with the announcement of 6, I've also been playing some 5 as well. And I've been into it. I've been loving Luke as one of the latest DLC characters to get dropped for the game. And I look through the starting roster, and like, again, me not being the biggest Street Fighter person, I'm not popping off left and right for all the different names, but I have been very impressed with their marketing rollout. Like, this has been one of the dopest, I'd say, video game marketing rollouts I've seen in a long time in terms of the cadence of it, in terms of the kind of announcements for it. It takes me back to when Smash Ultimate was first announced, and it was, here's the direct, here's the reveal. We're starting off with the Splatoon characters, right? And it's doing the thing. It's like, oh shit, this is actually Smash, right? And that being the reveal for Ultimate. But then shortly after, at E3, you get the Everybody Is Here trailer, right? And it's that big build of hype. And then throughout the years, you get the random Smash character reveals during, right? Like, that is such a dope-ass marketing rollout for that game, and only a game like Smash can do that. Street Fighter 6, just in terms of, hey, here's this character, here's Ryu, here's Luke, here's these brand new characters, and it being this nice cadence of these cool reveals, but then getting us to this place where it is now, here's the full roster, and it looks like a really solid roster, let alone here are the different features, here's the world tour, here's the creator character, here's all this. This game was announced, what, 4 months ago, and I feel like we've gotten so much at such a good pace. And I've been able to consume all of it in a way that usually for a game like this, it'd be really hard to deliver all that information. I think they've done such a good job with it.
Yeah, totally. We talked a little bit yesterday about the story mode stuff in this game and how it kind of seems like it's harkening back to an older era of when video games were just fun. And I appreciate that so much. And I'm with you that I think this game's rollout plan so far, I don't know that I'm as high on it as you seem to be, but I do think that they're really doing a great job of keeping the information coming at a clip that feels digestible, where we feel like we are learning about all the different modes of this game and it's not overwhelming, but there's so much in it. And I think that this is them proving that they've learned from the launch of Street Fighter V and the way that they discussed that game going into it. Whereas here it's like, cool, here's this launch lineup of roster of the fighters, and looking at it, Luke, Jamie, Manon, Kimberly, Marissa, Lily, JP, Jury, DJ, Cammy, Ryu, E Honda, Blanca, Guile, Ken, Chun-Li, Zangief, and Dhalsim. It's like a good mix of what everybody expects. You know, of course, the OG 8, right? Like, people want to see them all the time, but we've also get them so much. It's kind of like Generation 1 of Pokemon, where it's like, okay, like we get it, Pikachu. Like take a step back for a sec. So getting some of the newer characters, and not even just newer, like at this point, like characters like Jury have been around forever. So it's cool that this feels a little representative of speaking to all of the major fan bases of Street Fighter for launch, which is great. And then of course build off it from that. I imagine that when all said and done, pretty much every Street Fighter character is going to be in Street Fighter 6.
Yeah, you're going to have somebody by the time you get into the later years of Street Fighter 6 and what that, like, the content rollout looks like for it. But yeah,
do you ever watch Street Fighter the later years? Bless?
Which one was that?
I was, like, in the OG days of internet video. There was one of College Humor's first short series, like, when they first were going to actually make comedies. You should check it out. I think total, it's 9 episodes, and I think total content is, like, 30 minutes or less. Like, they're all really short, but the concept was, it was like 20 years later, 30 years later at that point, like after Street Fighter, what are those characters doing? And it's like Zangief's like a janitor at an arcade, and like, just, it's really, it was great.
That's awesome. Anyways. But yeah, looking at the roster, I like you mentioned, it is this mix of like old and new and the characters from different generations of Street Fighter. And I think it's a really good representation of, yeah, they're the characters that people, I think, view as the foundational characters. These characters have to be in a Street Fighter, right? It is Ryu, it is Ken, right? It is E-Honda, yeah, it is Blanca, Guile, Chun-Li. Like, these characters have to be there. But then, yeah, getting in new blood, I think introducing Luke at the end of the Street Fighter V rollout, letting people get a taste of that, and then that then leading into, oh yeah, you're also getting new characters like Jamie and Kimberly and these other ones. I think it's an exciting way to do it. I look at this roster, and again, as me being not super hardcore, but a Street Fighter liker, right? Like, this is a good roster. You know, I think this is a good starting roster, and there's so much to build on top of here when it comes to new characters. And I think there's a lot of room for fan favorites to come, but also, yeah, get in more new characters as the seasons go.
Yeah, really excited for it. I hope that they stick the landing on it. And so far, so good. Seems like they're speaking to the right people and saying the right things. So.
Were you a Street Fighter the movie person?
Like, wait, no. Any way you shake that, no. Well, oh, okay. Animated, yes.
The animated movie.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know if you were asking me. This is how my brain works, Wes. You said, were you a Street Fighter the movie guy? And I don't know why. My first gut instinct was, if you were asking me if I was a fan of the game Street Fighter the movie.
No. Yeah, no, I was talking about the actual movie.
Based on the Street Fighter movie. It's a whole thing. Anyways, story number two, keeping it in the fighting game family. So we got some good-ass Tekken headlines coming in. We have headline A, lowercase a, Blessing put this as, Tekken 8 doesn't reuse any Tekken 7 assets. This comes from Robert Ramsey at Push Square. An interesting detail from a new IGN interview with Tekken boss Katsuhiro Harada says Tekken 8 apparently doesn't use any assets from Tekken 7. This means that character models and environmental details, all of the visual stuff, has been built from the ground up using Unreal Engine 5, which makes a lot of sense because this looks awesome. Like, I'm editorializing a little bit here, but the trailer we're watching right now, the original debut trailer for Tekken 8, when we see them fighting and it looks like gameplay just without the HUD and the waves are crashing against the rocks, it's like, this is epic and sick as hell.
I was talking about this on a different episode, but like, the fact that when we first saw this trailer, I was like, oh, certainly this is a CGI spoof of what gameplay looks like. And Bear, if you go back to the original, or to the beginning, where it has the like disclaimer at the bottom of, this is all captured PS5 in engine, which again doesn't necessarily mean gameplay, but I think is representative of, hey, the game is going to look this dope when you're playing the game, right? The footage we're seeing is footage taken from the story mode. But yeah, it Tekken says real time, Tekken from the story mode, real time rendered footage captured. I can't read the rest because we're covering it, but like, you get what it is, right? Like, this is in engine footage and it is looking this hot. Amazing. Like, I don't know if you finished the news story or not, but like,
no, I didn't.
You can finish it real quick. All right, and I'll get into my soapbox.
This confirmation doesn't come as a huge surprise, seeing as Tekken 7 is around 7 years old. Its full arcade release happened in 2015. But it's nice to know that Bandai Namco is going the extra mile for its popular fighting game series. Previous Tekken titles have been known to pull assets from their predecessors, but again, that won't be the case with this new installment. Tekken 8's a bit of a stunner, going by its reveal trailer, which was made up of in-game footage taken directly from the title running on PS5.
The fact that Tekken 7 came out on, I believe, console in the West in 2017, but then came out years earlier in arcade, and it was built off of like PS3 and Xbox 360 like architecture in mind. Like, I was playing Tekken 7 last night on stream, and I was shocked by how dated that game looks, and I don't think I ever realized how dated it looked until I saw this trailer. Because again, originally looking at this trailer, I'm like, oh yeah, this looks fantastic. This looks like next gen Tekken. But then you go back to Tekken 7, it's like, wow, that game still looks good. You know, it's not an ugly looking game by any means. But man, does that game look dated now that I'm actually jumping into it and seeing like their hair textures and seeing the character models and seeing things that just don't look, up to par with what we expect from games in 2022, especially games from the new gen working off of something like Unreal Engine 5. There is so much room for growth. And hearing that, hey, they're not going back and reusing assets from previous Tekkens. This is going to be rebuilt from the ground up, or just built from the ground up. That's super exciting, because this game is going to look hot. I don't know if you probably remember, Tim, because you're a gamer, you're a classic gamer. Like Tekken was like a techie showcase kind of game
Yeah.
back in the day.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, yeah, thinking back to, so I am a fighting game fan, but like I am not good at all at any of them, and I stand by that, but I definitely always leaned more towards Street Fighter. And that's been like my franchise that, again, Smash would be my franchise that I'm actually like, I'm decent at that. Street Fighter, though, out of the classic ones, is definitely number one for me. Tekken would be the second place, mainly because of Tekken 3 and Tag Tournament. And then Mortal Kombat would be after that, just in terms of share. I've played a lot of them, but I like never really, really, really loved them besides the story modes of the recent ones. But with Tekken, they were always there with Virtua Fighter of pushing tech forward in a time when Street Fighter, while we look back now and we're like, yo, Street Fighter 3 was the sickness. At the time, a lot of people were kind of like, it's divided people, because it was like, oh man, this looks amazing. It looks like a just evolution of what we've had before, the pixel art, and it's beautiful. But then there were the people that are like, it's 3D or nothing, baby. And both Tekken and Virtua Fighter like pushed the boundaries in different ways. So it's cool to see Tekken now using Unreal Engine 5. Like, that's awesome.
1000%.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to play. This is probably going to be the first Tekken game that I give a shot, especially if that's story mode. But my first one I really give a shot since Tekken 4, which just, there's something about it. I was an Eddie Gordo guy.
You had to be.
I had to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I was spam circle. That's all.
Let me tell you about a character named Lucky Chloe, who, similar to Eddie Gordo, Eddie Gordo is, of course, capoeira. It does a lot of flips and shit. Lucky Chloe, breakdancer. And so when I saw her in Tekken 7, I was like, I got to use this character. And for me, as somebody who was originally an Eddie main, picking up Lucky Chloe, I was like, this girl is made for me. Like, she's dope. She's got the headphones. When she's just like standing around, she's doing like the B-boy top rocking move. Like, she is such a wonderful character to play as. And it feels like a fun evolution of Eddie in a way that I really like. But yeah, like to your point, right? Talking about Tekken and talking about these games kind of appealing to different fan bases. It's funny enough, I'm like you, but all in the opposite way, where Tekken was and has been my fighting game of choice. I've been more of the 3D fighter person than the 2D fighter person. But also, if I'm like ranking the hierarchy of fighting games for me, it is Smash is at the top. But then also, you then get down to Mortal Kombat and then probably Tekken right there, and those can shift any sort of way. And then right there also is Soul Calibur. There's not really been the modern Soul Calibur games haven't captured me as much as Soul Calibur 2 back in the day. Even though when they come out, I'll still play them and I'll still enjoy them. But yeah, I think these next couple of years, you know, who knows when Tekken 8 comes out? Hopefully it comes out next year or the year after. I think these next couple of games between Street Fighter 6, Tekken 8, and then even Project L, I think those are going to create a big wave of fighting game of people who weren't originally into fighting games or are casually into fighting games. Those people coming in, because I imagine you're going to play Street Fighter 6. It sounds like you're going to play Tekken 8. I think when Project L comes out, I think it's going to create this swell of interest, because it's Riot, and Riot right now are known as like the live service multiplayer gods in the game right now. And so I think that's going to create a lot of conversation. And it's going to be free to play. And so with that, there's not really much to lose. I think these three games are going to be huge as far as like what the next couple of years of fighting games look like, let alone we don't know what NetherRealm was doing. A new Mortal Kombat dropping is going to have the same impact as well. So fighting games are in a really great place right now.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Can you imagine if all three came out next year?
Oh, between, you talking about like Project L, Street Fighter?
No, Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Tekken.
I mean, there's a high probability.
There's a chance. There is a chance, yeah.
I think I might believe in Mortal Kombat coming out more than Tekken. Tekken 8, for some reason, for me, feels more 2024. And maybe that's just because they said stay tuned and as opposed to the concrete date. But Mortal Kombat feels like it's overdue. I feel like we should have gotten a new Mortal Kombat by now. Or at least a new NetherRealm project by now.
Any moment. Part B of this story. Harada praises Sakurai as probably the only one who could properly make Smash Brothers. This comes from Cap Bailey, the homie at IGN. Tekken's Harada is no stranger to Super Smash Bros. Creator Masahiro Sakurai. After all, Sakurai was a regular sight at Bandai Namco, which played a large role in developing Smash Ultimate and Smash Wii U. Towards the end of Smash Bros. Development, Harada and Sakurai worked together on adding Kazuya as a Smash Bros. DLC character. Asked whether he gained any insight from the experience for Tekken 8, Harada used the opportunity to praise Sakurai, calling it quite a shock. Quote, we knew quite well what to expect and his personality. And even that said, we were also surprised when it came time to make Kazuya for Smash Brothers, because we thought, since we're the experts at Tekken, maybe he was going to ask about the points he needed to definitely get right to make it feel like Tekken. But actually, that wasn't the case. He already had his own thoughts about what makes Tekken Tekken. So it was surprising, but also refreshing to see that he came in and didn't ask questions, but said, I've played a lot of Tekken and studied it, and this is what I feel is important for the game, right off the bat. So that was quite a shock. I mean, in a positive way. Harada says that the experience left him feeling as if Sakurai was the only one qualified to make Smash Brothers, a sentiment that Sakurai himself has shared at points, despite concerns for his health amid a grueling schedule. Quote, it made us think that he has all these characters from other different franchises and games in Smash Brothers, so to know so much to a deep extent about all these different IPs, to be able to do that, he's probably the only one that could properly make that game.
Hell yeah. Now, Tim, before we go on this conversation, I need to look to Barrett and ask, what do we need to do anything for, like, the internet bump that just happened?
No, it wasn't even internet. YouTube just sometimes is just like, oh, I'm not going to connect to OBS anymore. And so I stopped streaming from OBS, started streaming, and we're back up, so it's fine.
Okay. Did we lose any of that? Do we need to recap any parts of the story?
I don't know. That's up to the chat to tell me of, like, what was lost there. So we might need to talk about the story a little
bit. Because, like, if the end YouTube product slash podcast product misses out on the middle of the news story. Basically, the whole thing is Harada being like, we came to Sakurai to bring Kazuya into Smash, and Sakurai, and we were like, okay, cool, we'll tell Sakurai all about Tekken and what makes Tekken Tekken. And once they came to Sakurai, Sakurai was basically like, hey, I've studied Tekken, I've been playing Tekken, this is what I think makes Tekken Tekken, and he basically nailed it. And they're like, fuck, this guy knows his shit, which is the coolest story ever. Sakurai is dope as fuck, man.
He's dope as fuck, and we knew it, right? We've known it now for a very long time, but every single time he did the Mr. Sakurai Presents, like, I wanted to be there. Even ones I missed that, like, I didn't wake up at 5 a.m. to watch, I would go back and later watch them of him breaking down the characters, even when they were characters I didn't care that much about, because he has just such a vast knowledge, interest, and passion in the history of video games and what makes them unique and special. And like him talking about the feel of Tekken, it's like, how often do we talk about the feel of games? And it's funny because me and you specifically often talk about it, about the feel of Smash Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love that Sakurai has created this game in this world where it has its own feel, and then he also wants to respect the feel of the characters that he's bringing into it. So anyway, super great. Love that stuff.
It shows in the final product. Like, when you play as Kazuya in Smash, he feels like Kazuya, right? When you play as Ryu in Smash, he feels like Ryu. When you play as Mario in Smash, like, when you're jumping and you hear the point, like, there's so much attention to detail in Smash that it's ridiculous. And I believe Harada, and I believe, because I think Sakurai might have mentioned this before, that, like, you know, I don't know if there's anybody besides me that can make this game. And Harada kind of echoing that and being like, yeah, I don't know. Like, Smash is Smash because of Sakurai. At this point, like, I believe it. And I'm so curious / scared of where this franchise goes when Sakurai finally decides that, hey, I'm packing up here. Like, my time here is done.
Yeah. A couple more details coming from Nibel on Twitter about Tekken 7. Tekken 7 is close to 10 million sold units. Open-minded when it comes to guest characters, Harada is. He keeps an eye on Project L due to its possible impact on fighting games, and he's a huge PC gamer and builds his own. So there you go.
Cool. Yeah, shout out to IGN, Cat Bailey. Cat Bailey has a huge interview that she did with Harada that she published over there. It's so huge that I didn't even have time to read it before this KFGD. I had to, like, find the write-ups and find, like, the summations. But all of this is coming from her interview with Harada, and there's a lot of fascinating stuff there. And so, yeah, Tekken 7, close to selling 10 million units. That's huge. That's pretty good. Hoping they're able to push that even further with Tekken 8, because I think Tekken should be on that level of, like, being talked about with the Street Fighters and with the Mortal Kombat. And I think Tekken is probably, if I had to guess, right, like, probably, like, one tier under that. But it's such a fun, good fighting game, quality fighting game. And I think with Tekken having such a big presence at EVO, with, like, things like Tekken Bloodline, the anime series, and with, you know, Tekken just getting more quality iterations under its belt, I would think that maybe it can itch its way closer to those top dogs. Harada saying that he's keeping an eye on Project L, I think, is fascinating, just because Project L, again, being that Riot game, that Riot fighting game, I think the big thing that people are going to look towards with that one is it being free to play and what it brings as far as live service. You know, that's a thing that fighting games haven't been doing, but have tried before. I used to play this game, Tekken Revolution, Tim, on PS3 toward the end of the PS3 era, and it was a free to play Tekken game where, if you wanted to keep playing, you would either have to pay and buy tokens to keep playing, or you would have to win matches. And that is actually how I got good at Tekken. Is I started love playing that. Tekken Revolution, and I was like, cool, if I want to keep playing, I have to win because I don't have the disposable income. And I kind of like the idea of fighting games flirting with being free to play, because we're seeing the free to play market become more and more of a viable thing. And free to play, I don't think is now, I don't think free to play is still associated with bad quality. Because at one point, I would say it was. But now that we've gotten a lot of battle royales, now that we've gotten Fortnite, now that we have things like even multiverses, I think you're seeing different genres try out the space and end up navigating it in a way that is actually pretty decent, actually is pretty good. So Project L being one from Riot, I would imagine that the live service features for that are hopefully going to be really quality. And I think that's going to then teach a lot of other developers, a lot of other fighting game developers, how they can maybe navigate the free-to-play space if that's something they want to do. But yeah, all this stuff from Tekken 7 and Tekken 8 and Harada, I think is very fascinating stuff. Sounds like really cool stuff. And again, I'm very excited for where fighting games are at.
Yeah, for sure. Project L is just the code name. The final versions can be called Project W.
Good job, Tim.
That was for you, Bless. That was for you. A quick story for you as well. One of the first video game events that I ever went to, me and Alfredo have a picture of us with Harada and Yoshinori Ono, because they were promoting Street Fighter Cross Tekken and Tekken Cross Street Fighter.
Oh my god.
And we have a picture of the two of them like holding their hands up, and me and Alfredo in the middle of them. And it's just like, this is a weird moment in time that I need to find that picture, because
I love that.
Story number three, Elden Ring named 2022's best game at the Japan Game Awards. This comes from Andy Robinson at VGC. Elden Ring took the top honors at the Japan Game Awards held on Thursday. The critically acclaimed From Software action RPG received the grand award during the ceremony, which is run annually by Japan's Computer Entertainment Suppliers Association and partially voted for by the public. Quote, "This game, which depicts a dark fantasy world with overwhelming volume and quality, has gained tremendous support from many players. With enthusiastic comments such as, everything about this game is perfect. It's a god level game." Damn.
Wild statement. But also, yeah. Elden Ring is a fucking masterpiece. So I might agree. It might be a god level game.
Wow. Dark Souls creator Miyazaki was named the Minister of Economy, Trade and Industry Award winner, which is given to an individual or organization that's made a great contribution to the growth of the Japanese games industry. Elden Ring was also named among the 10 games given an award for excellence. The other winners in the category included Final Fantasy XIV, Endwalker, Ghostwire Tokyo, Horizon Forbidden West, Pokemon Legends Arceus, and Resident Evil Village. There's a full list of winners, including the Best Sales Award, going to Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, as if the money wasn't enough. The Global Award for Japanese product goes to Pokemon Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl. The Global Award for foreign product goes to Call of Duty Vanguard. Okay. Right. And Inscription got the Game Designers Award. So cool.
Pretty cool. Good on Elden Ring. This is just the beginning, I think. Elden Ring just getting a bunch of best game awards. It's really cool to see Miyazaki win the Minister of Economy, Trade, and Industry Award. Like, that is such a, like, not, like, it's not the kind of award I think of when it comes to a video game award show, but also I think legitimizes, hey, this guy's had an impact on the industry. Like, after Miyazaki, game design is going to be different in terms of how we approach action games, and so I think it's really huge to honor him in that way. But also, Tim, my question for you is, like, is this an indicator? Is Elden Ring just going to sweep Game of the Year awards?
I mean, yeah, I think it's going to. I don't even think that's a question, honestly. Like, I feel like this being an indicator, it's like it's a foregone conclusion that Elden Ring's going to win a ton of awards. Is it going to win all of them? Probably not. I mean, we have God of War Ragnarok coming out, but
that's the
big reality is God of War Ragnarok is a sequel to a revolutionary game, whereas Elden Ring is a culmination of a genre that is now reaching its mainstream level of success. So it's like, I feel like that alone is going to give Elden Ring the edge, no matter how good God of War Ragnarok ends up being. Having said that, we're talking about God of War Ragnarok. Like, we're talking about such a giant force that, like, yeah, it's going to be talked about a lot. But I do think that in previous years, we've had like, oh, there's so many games. There's Breath of the Wild, there's Odyssey, and there's Horizon. And then votes kind of got split one way or another. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I think the outlets that are going to push for Elden Ring are going to push their freaking hearts out for it. And I think that it Elden Ring takes it. Mm.
What do you think about Kind of Funny's Game of the Year? Which one do you think is going to get it? This is a conversation I had with Greg at the top of the week, and I think we're in opposite sides of it, where I think God of War Ragnarok is going to win our Game of the Year overall, and where Greg thinks Elden Ring is. But I think just in the Ratchet and Clank way of that game winning last year's, I think God of War Ragnarok will be in all of our top twos, but Elden Ring will be in only half of our top ones, which is going to push God of War over the edge.
Yeah, that's, I mean, maybe. Honestly, just sheer numbers of it all.
I'm pulling for Sifu.
God, could you imagine? Like, God of War and Elden Ring splitting the vote and Sifu winning.
That's what happened with Last of Us. Final Fantasy VII ended up, like, squeaking out the win. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I don't agree, but I can't be mad. I can't be mad.
Hey, Sifu's such a good game, though. Except on Switch, where it looks like a trash fire.
I would love if Sifu won. Also, I hope that Ragnarok is deserving, but we won't have to wait too long to find out. We have some breaking news that we're going to get to, but before we get to that, let's look at a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. We've all heard of gut instinct, but have you ever heard of butt instinct? It's when your butt tells you it wants new undies. Listen to your butt. Luckily, we work with MeUndies, makers of the most buttery, soft, and sustainable undies, bralettes, and socks that exist. You know that I have lived my life MeUndies head to toe for the majority of the last couple years. I'm just all in on MeUndies because they are absolutely the most comfortable clothes I've ever put on my body. Available in sizes extra small to 4XL. They have new colors and prints dropping weekly, so there's always something exciting to check out. You can try their free-to-join membership for free shipping on every order and exclusive perks like an item shipped to your door every month, secret sales, and early access to their newest stuff. MeUndies has a great offer for you guys out there. For any first-time purchasers, you get 20% off plus free shipping and returns. To get 20% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to Shopify for sponsoring this episode. Shopify powers our very own kindoffunny.com/store, our merch store. And we love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed from down the street to around the globe. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere. Shopify unlocks the opportunity of your business to more people every day, every 28 seconds. An entrepreneur like you makes their first sale on Shopify. Shopify powers millions of businesses from first sale to full scale. You can reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps. It's more than a store. Shopify grows with you. You can go to shopify.com/kfgames, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/kfgames right now. That's shopify.com/kfgames, all lowercase. Yo, we're here with some breaking news coming in hot from Nibel over on his Twitter. Confirmed on Sony's official PlayStation podcast, PSVR games are not compatible with PSVR 2. Oh,
what
no.
have I been telling you all for the last 2 years? I've been saying this over and over and over and over again because it's not possible. It's not possible. How would that even work? With PSVR 1 worked off the camera and the Move controllers. This one is outside, inside out tracking. It's not going to work to be backwards compatible. But it is what it is. Like, I'm not even mad about this because I think what's going to happen is that the PSVR games that are like worth playing, like the Beat Sabers of the world,
it's a Wii U
the
situation. Tetris
effects of the world, I think those will get ported because now that PSVR 2 works the same way as like some of the other VR helmets out there, like the Oculus helmets out there, I think that's going to do a lot in terms of, oh, we can just straight up just drag and drop this. I know porting's not dragging and dropping, but you get what I mean, just in a broad sense. So I'm not bummed out about this, but I did warn you all about this, and so I expect apologies in chat from all of you.
I am shocked about this. I understand what you're saying, but that's a figure it out Sony situation. Like, we're not talking about, oh man, the PS4 and 5 don't have backwards compatibility with whatever, like cell processors. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a very niche product to begin with that you already had as a niche product. You need to give this thing as much chance of success as possible. This is not good. This is not good. I think you're right. I think that the majority of the games that matter will get updates. I would be pretty sure that there's high likelihood that these things are going to be free updates from
a
lot of them.
Man, if only there was a way to like intelligently deliver these games to the audience, right? Like if you could, I don't know, in a smart way, just give these games to people who already bought these games on the previous platform and just make it so that it works easy. Where, yes. Oh man, I want to play Beat Saber on the latest platform. Let me just click Beat Saber because I had it on the last one. And oh, that's smart. It's delivered.
Bless.
Are you talking about in a smart way?
About a concept like a smart delivery system?
Oh my dude, yeah, I think smart delivery would be a great way to put it. Whoa. If I could get a smart delivery on PlayStation where I can play these games that I already own on the latest hardware, easy. Oh, that'd be pretty smart. That'd be really consumer friendly, and I think would get a lot of people into VR.
Yeah, but here we are. PSVR 2. It's an uphill battle, but they know the audience they're going for. Maybe they're like, yo, we got them on lock.
Oh, yeah.
But still, I mean, I feel like regardless of the fact that probably most of the heavy hitters, the Beat Sabers, the things that are a little bit more like platform agnostic to begin with, that are more representative of VR and less of PSVR, I think those are easier sells, right? Where it's just like, cool. I mean, essentially the third-party titles. But then you look at the PSVR titles, it's like, if PSVR 2 launched and it had just the library of like, even just the experiences, like the Batman experience, like all the stuff that we all had fun with for a weekend, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that one weekend could be stretched out longer because we're talking about a couple of years worth of PSVR games, like Iron Man VR and Blood and Truth and all that stuff. And so it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Not good.
I think the way they can kind of iron this one, if there was some kind of like, no, but we got free updates for you, I think that'll be huge. I hope they have it. I'm not judging by the PS4 to PS5 transition. I'm not super confident that they'll have that, but I can hope. I think having a dope ass roster of games toward the launch and in the launch year could help out a lot too. Because if I'm coming in and I'm not having to think about the Blood and Truths of the world and the Iron Man VRs of the world and the Saints and Sinners and the Trover Saves the Universe and the Beat Sabers and the Tetris Effects, and I am thinking about Horizon Call of the Mountain and Saints and Sinners 2 and like whatever the next like phase of VR games are that are new and exciting, if they can deliver on those, then maybe they can kind of sweep the previous stuff under the rug and go, hey, but you have all this new shit to care about. We just don't have, I don't think we have enough of a slate yet to really, you know, be excited for it in that way. I think they got to build that up. And hopefully they do by the time we get to it.
We'll see. Story number 4. Vince Zampella thinks EA strayed too far from what Battlefield is with 2042. This comes from Jordan Midler at VGC. Electronic Arts Vince Zampella has given his assessment on the disappointing launch and critical reception of Battlefield 2042. In an interview with Barron's, the Respawn and Infinity Ward co-founder, who is now the overseer of the entire franchise, suggested that 2042 moved too far away from the classic Battlefield experience. Quote, I think they just strayed a little too far from what Battlefield is. They tried to do a couple of things that were maybe ambitious, grow the player count, etc. I don't think they spent enough time iterating on what makes that fun. It's not inherently a bad idea. The way they were set up and the way they executed just didn't allow them to find the best thing possible.
I like that they're being open about it, right? Like, hey, we didn't nail this, which we all kind of already know, but the fact that they're saying it internally, or at least Vince is saying it, I think goes a long way in terms of, all right, cool, now let's make it better, right? Like, what does the next Battlefield need to do in order to actually be a great release? Because I'm like, I when it came to the first-person shooter fall of, hey, it's Battlefield, it's Halo, and it's Call of Duty, leading up to it, I think it was kind of easy to guess that Battlefield would be the one that would fall between the cracks. And that was even with marketing that I say was like pretty decent, right? Like I looked at those Battlefield trailers and I was like, oh, this stuff looks cool. Like the Battlefield portal looks
chaos.
The chaos looks cool. All the like the tornadoes and like, you know, all the shit going on in the levels, all that stuff seemed like good steps. But I think Battlefield is a game that was releasing at a time where first-person shooters have changed, and it was doing a lot of things the same. And so with Call of Duty, of course, one, Call of Duty is Call of Duty, right? So a premium Call of Duty game is going to sell regardless. But also the Call of Duty Warzone for the people that want to hop into it free-to-play. For Halo released, you know, on Xbox Game Pass, but also free-to-play, right? Overwatch is shifting into free-to-play. First-person shooters right now are going through a shift, and I think to be a premium a premium PvP shooter right now, you either have to bring in something that's super unique and super, like, you have to be a Rainbow Six Siege, or you just have to shift your, I think, your, like your release, right, in terms of being free to play or finding ways to get people in, right? Is it going to be Game Pass? Is it going to be PS Plus? Is it going to be something else to, like, get in an audience?
Yeah, it's, I think there's an extra element, too, when it comes to these shooters, where there was such a fight between Call of Duty and Battlefield in the early years, and then Call of Duty just ran so much further and faster eventually, that it was now competing not so much with just Battlefield, but even just with entire genres and new genres that were forming, like Battle Royales, where Warzone drops kind of as a competitor to Fortnite, but Call of Duty still has its multiplayer suite out there that people are in swarms and swarms playing, right? Looking at the triple A-ness of it all and the budget of having to just make these games bigger and bigger and bigger, and you get to seeing the Battlefield trailer with the tornadoes and shit, and it's just like, this is untenable at a certain point. Like, without that monetization strategy of a thing like Warzone to kind of back up putting those resources into a crazy game like that, it's like, I don't know, man, Call of Duty kind of lucked itself into being so big, not that it can't fail, but that it's going to be easy for it to just kind of keep succeeding doing what it does. Whereas Battlefield, I feel, never quite had the wins it needed in multiple verticals at the end of the day between traditional multiplayer suites and the Battle Royale side.
Tim, did you catch that you said triple anus?
Hell yeah, I did.
I was really trying to keep it together. I was trying to keep it together so hard. But I was like, that is perfect. That's a perfect statement.
That's so awesome. Funny. That's really awesome.
Oh, man.
Oh, man, indeed. Story number five. How do you say this game? Suikoden? Is that how you say it?
Yep.
Okay.
Triple anus.
Suikoden 1 and 2 HD remasters have been announced. This comes from Saul Romano at Gamatsu. Konami has announced Suikoden 1 and 2 HD remaster, Gate Rune, and Dunen Unification Wars for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, launching in 2023. The remasters will include graphical improvements from the press release, pixel sprites, and environment art enhanced with new screen effects, including lighting, clouds, and shadow animations, flickering flames, smoldering smoke, the movement of leaves, and insects. They all add up to a lively in-game atmosphere. How fun. There'll also be new character design, sound improvements, and game system improvements, including dialogue log. That's what it says. Dialogue log, auto battle, double speed battles, etc.
Triple anus.
Cool, man. Jared Petty's joking.
Yeah, Jared Petty's
doing
a dance. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
He's so happy. Good for Suikoden fans.
Yep.
I was the last night when this news popped. I saw a lot of people just excited, like very happy. And it was one of those things where I've not played Suikoden. I've not paid attention to Suikoden. I heard Jared Petty talk about Suikoden, and it sounds like a really cool game. But man, oh man, were the JRPG fans happy about this one? And I'm happy for you. Like, yep. Go get them.
This is it's cool. one of those franchises that I feel if you know type stuff. Like, this was definitely, I remember the 100th issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly that had the top 100 games of all time, and one of these games was on it. And I was like, huh, one day I'll play that. Never did. I never did. But
well, you know.
No, I won't. But I'm happy that other people are going to replay it for the first time in probably a long time. And some people playing it for the first time. Are you going to play it, Les?
No, I'm not going to play it. But it's really cool that games can come back in this way, right?
No, where it is.
There was the Ayuden Chronicles game that was put on Kickstarter that was a Suikoden successor. And I believe that is still being worked on. But the fact that Suikoden fans can now get these HD remasters of these games that they love from back in the day and also get a successor to it, probably coming out close-ish to each other, maybe a year after the other, if not around the same time. That's dope, and that can only make me believe that one day I'm gonna get a Jet Force Gemini remake, but then also maybe a Jet Force Gemini successor. We don't talk about Tamarin that came out a couple years ago because that game was bad. It was really bad. But hey, like, dreams can come true is my takeaway from this story. And so good.
Oh,
for you
yeah,
guys.
They 1,000% can.
What is your video game dream? Right,
I mean,
now,
bless it. Honestly, I've hit a point where, like, I everything I asked for happened. Like, the fact that they actually, from the ground up, remade Crash 1 through 3 and then also made a Crash 4 and then also gave me Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 remake, and all those things were as good as they were. Mm. I'm going to ask for more. I'm a selfish little boy.
Like, what's left for you to even ask for at this point? I mean, you have gotten everything.
Tony Hawk 3 and 4, which they, you know, RIP to the dream. But like, real talk, like at this point, the type of dream shit I'm looking for in terms of remakes is Mario 64.
Oh. And if
that's my dream, it's like, I feel like that's inevitable at some point.
You think so? Your dreams weren't dashed with the Super Mario 3D All-Stars collection? Because mine were. The fact that they put it out and they barely touched that game, that hurt my soul.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. Story number six, Genshin Impact is becoming an anime. This comes from Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Genshin Impact's officially becoming an anime as developer HoYoverse has announced a new collaboration with animation studio Ufotable. Announced during the game's version 3.1 special program, a 3-minute concept trailer showed off the art style and feel of what the anime will eventually be. Given that this is just a concept trailer, it will likely be some time before the final episodes are released, and HoYoverse have branded this as a long-term project. The video does give us a brief teaser, however. Let's step into this vast, magical world of adventure together, its description reads. The long-term collaboration project between Genshin Impact and Ufotable has begun.
UFO table.
I was going to say, is it Ufotable or is it UFO table?
UFO is all capped in their logo. Mm.
Is it triple anus or is it triple anus?
It's all lowercase how I'm looking at it. So I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to run through this.
Let's put that on IGN.
Ufotable.
This is cool for the people that want this. I'm somebody who, I like anime and I like Genshin Impact. I honestly couldn't care less about this. But like, watching the trailer right here, it looks cool. Like the style of it looks like it's quality. Bear, you mentioned earlier that like you have the deets on UFO table.
Yeah, chat's also corrected me. I don't know, man. They spell it UFO table. UFO table?
Oh, so did Tim get it right the first time?
No.
Triple anus. they're the studio behind the Demon Slayer anime adaptation of the manga. They do great work animation style wise, and they're also like not disfamiliar with video games. They worked on cutscenes and opening animations for the God Eater series. They also did the opening animation and cutscenes for Tales of Arise that came out last year, and Code Vein. And so they're a really great studio, and I think they deliver some top-notch animation. So for those Genshin Impact fans, like, y'all might be getting some heat with this one.
I mean, that changes my opinion a little bit, because I didn't realize that they did Demon Slayer. Demon Slayer, one of the hottest-looking animes I've ever seen visually. That's a good-looking anime right there. And so, like, if they're working on this, just for the spectacle of it, like, I'm somebody who doesn't care about the Genshin story. I know y'all are out there. But I played 40 hours of it, and I was like, I just can't vibe with this world and this story as much as I do the gameplay and the exploration.
Didn't have an impact on you?
It didn't have an impact on me. But looking at the visuals, I'm like, dude, it looks cool. And if it's being done by Ufotable and they're breaking that Demon Slayer level of, hey, let's really make this thing pop visually, I can see myself putting this on in the background and peeking over and going, oh, damn, what a good-looking show, and then going back to doing my work or whatever I'm doing.
Watching it while you do your dailies.
And while I'm doing my, maybe this is the thing that gets me out of retirement. Because Tim, I don't know if I told you this. A few months ago, I announced that I have retired from Genshin Impact. Mm. I hung up my jersey like Michael Jordan when he started golfing, and I decided that I'm not playing Genshin Impact anymore, because it just turned into a cycle of I'm doing the same things just to level up, just so I can work my way towards what? I don't even care about the things long term anymore. Like, I just wanted to unlock Aloy, and I did that, and then I just kept playing because like it's addicting. But also, I just wasn't getting the satisfaction out of it, and so I had to cut loose.
It's really weird how games can work that way, especially when they have that type of system in place where there is the always incentives, always numbers going up, like the mobile gamification of things, because you're playing it, and you're like, this is so fun. I love this. I want to get this thing, and I want to get that thing, and I can't wait. I'm going to keep grinding. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm having such a good time. I can't believe that people wouldn't want to do this. This is great. And then you hit a point eventually, you're like, I'm doing all the things. Why?
Yeah.
And like, I feel like those two moments happen every single time I played a game like that, but I can't ever identify the moment it changed.
Yeah,
it's just all of a sudden, it just slow happens where you're like, I'm playing this. And it makes you look back and you're like, did I ever enjoy this as much as I thought? And it's a weird thing that I found unique only to this type of game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe part of it has to do with just the wealth of content and the amount of things to do, and it being Genshin being this game that it is that, you know, get the numbers up kind of game, right? And it is, hey, unlock the characters, hey, spend on the roles, hey, unlock new weapons, and then level up each character individually. There is so much shit to do in Genshin, and a lot of the shit is cool shit. Like, a lot of it is, hey, you can go out and quote-unquote date the characters. They don't say date, but you're going on dates. You can basically date the characters. You have side stories for each of the characters. You can start a farm. You can do a roguelite mode. You can explore the dungeons. You can, Breath of the Wild style, just go whatever direction in the open world and see where the game takes you. And there's so much there. But, yeah, I reached a point where I booted up one day, started doing my dailies, and I was like, why am I doing my dailies? Why do I care about this? Why am I? I'm not having fun with this anymore. And maybe it's just I grew out of it kind of thing. I don't know exactly what it is. All I know is one day I just stopped and I just didn't have the love for it anymore. I have appreciation for it because I think Genshin is a beautiful looking game. I think the world's really impressive. I think the production of it is really, really impressive. But yeah, dude, I just had that, like, it just, my interest level just dipped off a cliff out of nowhere. I am looking forward to their new game, though, the Zenless Zone Zero. That looks really cool. So I'll go through that process all over again with that one.
Well, bless. I'm so sorry to say that Zenless Zone Zero, it's just so far away.
It's so far away.
So far away. If I wanted to know what's coming to Bob and Grop Zops today, where would I look?
You would look toward the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got various Daylife on PS4, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Open Beta Weekend 1, PS4, PS5, Incision Early Access on PC, Accident on Switch, Amazing Chicken Adventures on Xbox, Devoured by Darkness on Switch and Xbox, Knights and Guns on Xbox, Last Beat Enhanced on PS4 and 5, The Dark Prophecy on everything, Unichrome, a 1-bit unicorn adventure on Xbox, and Wolong Fallen Dynasty has a demo up now that I think Snowbike Mike is gonna Twitch stream later today.
Oh, so really? I have it downloaded. I actually can't wait for that. That was the one that was shown off at Gamescom, right? That all of us were like, yo, this looks dope as fuck. And I saw a few people being like, yo, this looks like, this plays like Neo 3 if you're somebody who is into the Neo franchise. Like, it has some of that energy to it. So I can't wait to actually pick it up and
3-0,
play it.
3-0, as some would say.
3-0, yeah. Mm.
What is this one, Barrett?
This is Knights and Guns. It was just such a weird title that I had to look it up.
Looks kind of cool.
This looks kind of cool.
Some new dates for you. Genshin Impact V3.1 is arriving September 28th with a new desert area.
I got to get back.
Gotta get back. Hollow Knight Silk Song is coming to PS5 and PS4. They announced today. So, yeah. Hell yeah, man. More people get the knight. Will they get the guns? Deals of the day for you. Sackboy, A Big Adventure. The Toem costume DLC is free on the US PSN. And Ark, Survival Evolved, and Gloomhaven will be free next week on the Epic Game Store. Remember, even if you're getting free games on Epic Game Store, use our code. Kinda Funny. It helps us. We get money for free. You get games. It's great. I don't really know how that works, but it does. It does. Time for some reader mail.
Jordan, this is a dangerous one, Tim. This one that you're about. I don't know if you pre-screened this one. This is one that I was like, if we had got a lot of time and we want to fuck around, we can do this one. But also, this is one that's going to bring up some bad feelings from yesterday's KFGD. Just as a forewarning, I'm going to leave it up to you if you want to do
this.
I'm going to read it.
He's going to read it. Hey, Tim and Bless. Listened to KFGD late yesterday, so I didn't get to hear the I Am Sam stuff till long after recording, but I saw you both were hosting today, and I'm a chaotic bitch. I want to point out that Elle Fanning's sister, Dakota Fanning, played the lead role of Sally in the live-action Cat in the Hat movie from 2003. The Cat in the Hat was written by Dr. Seuss. What else did Dr. Seuss write? Green Eggs and Ham. What is one of the lines from that book? Sam, I am. Boom. Elle Fanning, Death Stranding 2. Maybe with the Dr. Seuss motif. I think Jordan's onto something, Bless.
That's why I keep trying to tell y'all, all right? Y'all motherfuckers doubted me.
And also, I didn't know where you were going with the Lucy thing yesterday, Bless, and if you want to explain that, like, re-explain that, the way you tweeted about it, I was like, oh, actually, that does make sense a lot. That does make sense.
Yeah. So, like, it was one where, okay, so Lucy, right? So to recap, Elle Fanning in I Am Sam played the baby version of a character named Lucy, who is Sam's daughter in that movie. Now, for those who have finished Death Stranding, it is a Death Stranding spoiler, which is why I like kind of kept it in the pocket. But at the end of Death Stranding, Sam, Porter Bridges in that game, is left as the single father of a child that he named Lou. Lou was named after Louise, who was the baby that he had with his wife, Lucy. There is a Lucy in that game that is tied to their child, Lou. And so, like, that is the connection I was making, but also, I get it, people think it's a stretch, but also it's ARG. Everything's gonna be a stretch in this thing.
But bless.
What up?
Dr. Seuss.
Sam I Am.
The Grinch.
No, Tim, stop it.
God!
No, Tim, stop it.
It all comes full circle.
Stop it.
Think about it.
Kojima's a fucking genius, all right?
Think about it.
Stop downing the man. He's a fucking genius.
So that's been your kind of funny games daily for today. Whatever the fuck today is, Friday, September 16th, 2022. Sometimes things just work out, bless.
I didn't even think about that.
The chaos energy, holy baby. Shit. God, I love it so much. Let's see. What do we have going on? There's a lot of things here that I expected things here that aren't here, bless. I thought you were slacking, Greg.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. You're talking about, okay, next week's host for Kind of Funny Games Daily is a motley crew of video game journalists from Fanbyte. Of course, Fanbyte had a lot of layoffs. We want to show them a lot of love. And so all next week, you're going to get a lot of hosts that are from formerly of Fanbyte.com. Hosts like, when I open up the Daniel Riendo, the again, formerly of Fanbyte, Nikki Grayson, Jennifer Locke, the homie Funke, and Carly Veloci. I believe those are what we have on the schedule right now. Tentative. There could be shakeups.
Carly Veloci, formerly of Windows Central, not that.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
good call out to make.
So there we go. And then Jennifer Locke, formerly of Android Central.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Greg's putting this together. Greg's not on this show. Me and Bless are here. But next week, it's going to be a lot of people, a lot of really cool people. So come support youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, 10 a.m. every single day live. Show more love than normal, okay? Let's give them a nice show to be able to do and be able to use going forward, trying to get a job somewhere else, hopefully better than where they were before. But Bless, it's been really fun hanging out with you. After this is over, Mike's playing the Call of Duty open beta on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can go watch that live. If you want to watch that later, youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays.
Tim,
we're about to do...
Before you move on and wrap up, I have to do my due diligence and remind you about kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong.
You do. You do. Thank you very much for that. Kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you can correct us as we get things wrong. Jay Fulcrum says the Modern Warfare 2 beta is locked behind pre-order until Sunday. Just a little more info there. We got Hales is saying the Genshin Cross UFO table announcement doesn't specify an anime series, but it's just a long-term collaboration. What exactly the project is still unknown, so could be something different.
I mean, the IGN article starts off saying Genshin Impact is officially becoming an anime as developer HoYoverse has announced a new collaboration with animation studio UFO table. And so, unless IGN got that factually wrong, I trust IGN, but who knows?
You're wrong and you're wrong. I don't know. But anyways, that's it. Otherwise, we're right, everybody. We're just right. I think that's it. We're doing the post show. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames supporters. You can check it out.
Tim, have you peeped the post show?
I have not. I'm going to tell you right now. It's the shit list. It's famous shit gaming list. Characters that share the same name.
So
This
isn't going to be a ranked list situation. This is us going to be trying to figure out the 8 iconic video game characters that share the same name. Can me and Tim even figure out 3 of these? We're gonna figure out in the post show.
Oh my god, I don't know. This is gonna be really, really damn.
I mean, I can
hard.
Tell you one right now. It's gonna be Raiden and Raiden.
That's all I got.
Too. We'll see if we can figure out more later.
Okay. Well, everybody, I love you. Goodbye.